show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. And now, as of this show, a partner with Baseball Prospectus. This will be our first show that's newly recorded, that's going up on the Baseball Prospectus Kansas City website. First, of course, introductions. If there's anybody who's seeing, you know, coming to the BP Kansas City site for the first time and seeing this podcast, I am Jeff Herr. I'm the host of the show. With me is Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this fantastically awesome weathered night?
I'm pretty excited. I think this is pretty cool to be on Baseball Prospectus, and I know we're carrying a lot of our old listeners who are probably rolling their eyes right now because we're going to do, like, I guess, some impromptu brief intro for anybody who's new, who's finding us for the first time on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City. So sorry, old listeners, but you know our drill by now. This is this is what we do. So we'll get to the baseball in a sec.
If you would like to follow us on Twitter, which we very much appreciate, Mike and I tweet about Royals far more often than we should, especially during the season when lots of things are happening. And through us, you'll also definitely follow. If you found this podcast through the Baseball Prospectus Kansas City site, everyone involved in that site, all the writers, they should have too many to go through each one and give out Twitter handles, but they should all have it up on their links to their pages and everything if you were to click on their names within a particular article or something. So definitely follow all those guys, Craig Brown, David Leskey, all those guys, that writers. I follow all of them. Mike follows all of them. They put out great content. They put out great stuff about the Royals. Clint Scholes had a great article today about some Royals prospects to look out for, similar to kind of a show we had earlier with Jaheven, had some quotes from Jim Callis, not necessarily from our interview, but he had some of those in there. So be sure to follow Mike and I, follow all them for great Royals content. And we're going to be pumping out a lot of it at BP Kansas City. And you obviously probably found us through the site, but if for some reason, you know, if you're a longtime listener and it's still downloading through iTunes or through some other podcast app that you have and just automatically downloading, and you want to go to the new site, which you should, it's bpkansascity.com. That's B as in boy, P as in pitch, kansascity.com. And yeah, like Mike said, super excited to be a part of the Baseball Prospectus Kansas City site. It's really exciting stuff. A lot of great writers that have all kind of come together. There's been a lot of great writers that have put in a lot of great content in the Royals blogging community, and now the kind of the best, if you will, they've all been put together, and now they're running the Baseball Prospectus Kansas City site. And then, Mike and I are contributing our podcast as well. So super exciting times. Longtime listeners, thanks for helping us get here and coming along for the ride. And any new listeners, hope you like what you hear and hope you keep tuning in and listening to us and follow everyone on Twitter. And yeah, fun times.
Yep. I think that covers all of those things. Yep. Obviously, if you want to go to on Twitter, you can follow BP Kansas City at BPro Kansas City. And you can follow us separately at KC Baseball Vault. But we'll put all that stuff online. And you'll have ample opportunity to find our Twitter handles and follow along. But, you know, new or old, we're happy you're here. And
yes.
Today, what we're going to do is, I don't remember if we did this 2 years ago, so I guess we'll call this the second annual over under.
We'll start with that.
Extravaganza second. And pancake luncheon.
Yes.
I don't know why I just felt like adding things to it. I wanted to say
pizza party shortly to follow.
Right. Bring your own pizza. We need a big asterisk.
BYOP.
Right. Pizza is not provided. I'm sorry. All content on BP Kansas City, however, is free. So don't be afraid of any kind of paywall. There's the subscription content on Baseball Prospectus is fantastic, but the local sites are free. So that is a fantastic benefit to follow along and read all the great stuff and join in the fun. So
absolutely. And so with that, we'll just jump right into it. Our first segment here, as Mike mentioned, the second annual Over Under Extravaganza and Pancake Luncheon. Stay tuned for the pizza party. So what we do here is we take every year and we're using these numbers before. So it's just kind of kismet, if you will, now. But the baseball prospectus has their projections for the player for what they think players are going to do. Talking, run the gamut of everything, batting average, on base, home runs, RBIs, all that stuff. So we kind of we comb through all the players and kind of pick the different ones that we think are really the ones that you would really kind of look really hard at if you were in Vegas doing a prop bet. Be like, oh man, that's a really good line. Should we go over under? So we kind of picked out a lot of those, and we're going to go through each one one by one. It's not every player, and it's not every stat, so don't worry about that. It's not going to be this isn't going to be a 6-hour show, though. Those things have happened, but it's usually for a live show or something where we just ramble on and have a bunch of guests and stuff. But never 6 hours. But I think we've had a couple 3-hour shows. But anyway, so we've got a bunch of them going on, and we'll start with number one. Mike, I'll let you start. Eric Hosmer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fantastic year last year. Everyone's thinking he's going to break out. The over-under is 15 home runs. That's the median or the mean, the projected average for Eric Hosmer. But I think we should stick with the over-under. Let's stick with the 90th percentile projection for him, which is 18 home runs. I think that's a little bit more realistic. That's a little bit harder to think. I think because personally, I'm not sure what you think, but I would probably go over pretty easily on 15 because someone of Hosmer's caliber hitting 16 home runs is not that difficult. So
yeah.
I think 18, considering his career high is 19, I think 18 is where we want to be. So 18 over under Eric Hosmer. Start with it, Mike. What do you got?
I'm going to say over. And here's what I'm looking at. You look over his career. 2011, he hit 19 home runs. 2012, he really struggled the first couple months, but kind of righted the ship later on. Still ended up with 14 home runs. That was a rough year, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that definitely is, as far as that 15 at his 50th percentile projection, yeah, I think 15 is pretty easy over. 2013, he hit 17 home runs. Last year, he hit 18. And the outlier is 2014, where he hit only 9. But, I mean, three of those, those top 3 years all averaged 18. He's going to be 26 years old. We saw in a number of cases where, when he did hit the ball out, he drilled it. I mean, he hit it with a ton of authority. He has opposite field power. He has big pull power. He can hit it out over center field. He's never been a 20 home run guy, but I think a lot of that has to do with being in Kauffman Stadium so much. And he even said in an article on MLB.com last week, I believe it was, that, he does, at least he hints that his approach is a little bit different because of a lot of the ballparks that he plays in. Comerica Park is a pretty big one. Target Field is pretty big. So, then Kauffman Stadium, obviously, and that's where a lot of his games are played. And so that is going to put a damper on his home run numbers. But at the same time, this is a mid-30s double kind of guy. He's when he hits the ball in the air, he can hit it out. I mean, he jumped to about 16% on home runs per fly ball. Now, the one thing that I would say that would hold him back other than Kauffman Stadium is that he hits the ball on the ground so much, and he hits it on the ground, more than half the time, which is kind of strange for a guy of his size. You know, he's 6'4", 225. You'd think that guy can be just beastly and elevate everything. But he does hit it on the ground a lot, and that kind of holds him back. It gives him, you know, less opportunities for a fly ball and less opportunities for those to go over. So I think that would be the one thing. But for 18, I feel like he's in those kind of peak years. He's got 2 years on his contract. This is the kind of time where if he's going to bust out to be a star, it's going to start now. I know he's had this pattern of good year, off year, good year, off year. And then last year was a good year, so the pattern would say off year. But, I mean, that's there's nothing that says that he has to have an off year just because it's an even year. It's not like the inverse of the San Francisco Giants. It's just
I was about to say, if he ends up having an off year, then we know it means that the Giants won the, or the Giants will win the World Series. So,
it's like they're the Monstars. They're sapping Eric Hosmer's power.
That's exactly it. Gave it all to Hunter Pence.
Right. And you know, Brett Saberhagen did that a lot too, where he had the on year and off year and stuff like that. Even though his bad years were still like really good. But you know, they were still not like Cy Young caliber. They were just kind of above average. But
anyway,
Hosmer, yeah, I would say over on 18. I mean, I wouldn't say like 25, 30, but I think, you know, something 20 to 22 home runs. I think he can do that and, you know, continue to have a good batting average. And he walked a lot better last year, so I think his pitch recognition is getting better. And that's going to help him out too when it comes to, you know, finding the pitch that he can hit, drive it, and put it over the fence.
Yeah, I mean, and if you if Mike Moustakas can hit, how many hits, home runs did he hit? Did he hit 22 home runs last year?
Yeah.
And so if Mike Moustakas can do that, then Eric Hosmer definitely can. I think that I'm hesitant, but I think I'm going to go over as well on the 18 home runs because, like you said, I really think last year there was, you mentioned the walk numbers, which were great to see. Most walks in his career, most walks in a single season of his career. But there was a presence at the plate that I saw that I didn't really see, a comfort level that I hadn't really seen before. You know, there was a lot of the low and away pitch was, you know, Alex Gordon, Mike Moustakas, and Eric Hosmer seem to really have, especially coming from lefties, really have a tough time. And it's a tough pitch, you know, especially depending on if you got a guy like Chris Sale, who's got kind of a three-quarter sidearm delivery, and, you know, that ball kind of sweeps and then goes to the – I mean, it's a lot easier said than done, but that was one of the hardest pitches for all those hitters to lay off of. And – I think when they would get into these ruts where they'd keep biting on those pitches, and I noticed it with Hosmer and with Moose as well, they'd kind of get frustrated, and it would kind of compound on itself. And so I think that was something that Hosmer was able to kind of get over a little bit. He's still definitely, I mean, sometimes a pitcher's just a good pitcher, throws a good pitch, you know, what are you going to do? But, you know, there was an aspect of his ability to, you know, lay off that pitch more than in the past, and not let it get to him as much, it seemed, when he would strike out, when he would have, you know, bad at bats or whatever, which I think just comes from the overall team confidence level that they have. So looking at all those things together, you mentioned the ground ball statistic, and that's something that it is kind of perplexing that he hits the ball on the ground so much, given what he, you know, I mean, he's supposed to be a power hitter. He came up, everyone was saying he was going to be that guy and everything. So, you know, hopefully he becomes a 30 home run guy more than even just a 20 home run guy. I think those days of hoping for that are gone, but 2025, I think, could be, I don't think he's going to hit that necessarily this year, but that's definitely, it's not outside the realm of possibility.
It's in his range. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So I think we'll both over. Mike, do you have that marked down in your notebook?
I do, so we can review these at the end of the year and maybe at the All-Star break like we did for a status report last year. We can kind of see where we're at.
See how big of idiots we look like only at midseason.
Right, and I'm writing them down on paper, so you know,
you guys can... Yes, so it's permanent.
Yeah, right. It's an analog world, and I'm just living in it.
That's right. Ring binder.
Not in the binder. This is just a notebook.
Oh, just a notebook. Okay, totally a different. Spiral.
The binder's for special occasions.
But the binder is only for live Kelly's watch parties.
Right. Exactly. So okay, we're both over on Hosmer.
Yep.
Which yeah, I'm not too surprised by that. So we'll go on to the next one, and this is an important player. Obviously, we're looking at Salvador Perez, who just signed his extension just a couple weeks ago. The Royals say they're not going to change any of his usage necessarily. So the line that we've set, and this involves a stat that we haven't referenced a whole lot on this show very often. It's the true average, which is a calculation from Baseball Prospectus that it aims to take every scenario and everything that a player does and wrap it up into one stat, one number that's weighted against the rest of the league. It's weighted against the time period, and it's weighted against stadium and the environment and things like that. Just the general run scoring environment. And true average, the average works out to 260, so 0.260. And the projection from Baseball Prospectus that we're using at the 50th percentile for Sal Perez has a true average of 265, so just slightly above average for Sal Perez, three-time All-Star catcher, you know, life of this team. So that's where we're setting it. So 265, a little bit above average. Where do you stand, Jeff?
I'm going to take a bullish stance on this. I'm going to go over on this because I think there are some things that, you know, when Sal Perez came up, he had immediate success. He was up for, you know, 40 games, whatever it was in 2011, and 331 or whatever his batting average was for those 40 games. It looked like he was just going to be an absolute superstar. And I mean, that's what he's become, World Series MVP and all that. But, you know, his numbers have obviously, you know, he didn't replicate that year after year. And the last two seasons, he's had a 260 batting average. But I think that the Royals, I know, have been really trying to get to him and to make him be more patient at the plate, be more selective with his pitches, to just have a better approach altogether. And it's not – he's never going to be a guy that walks 200 times in a season. He's never going to be a guy with a – 375 on base percentage, you know. But I do think that there is some things that the Royals are kind of getting through to him a little bit. And I think with the power that he's shown, mm-hmm. and with, you know, hitting in a lineup with all these other hitters who, you know, if Kendrys Morales can replicate what he did last year, and Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer and Alex Gordon, and, you know, I think being in that lineup and, you know, the less and less pressure that he has to need to be the big guy, I think only helps. So I think he'll go into the season fresh. And usually what you see with Salvador Perez in the splits, usually he starts out pretty well and then just kind of falters towards the end of the season. So maybe that's just kind of anecdotal because it doesn't really, stats don't really bear that out much, but he had a 337 on base percentage in April, you know, and then in July he's hitting a 211 on base percentage. So
it's like, you know, the valleys are seem like they're deeper.
Yes.
It's kind of what it seems like. Maybe it evens out by, you know, a hotter month, but, you know, he does go into the tank for a bit where, and I don't know if that's fatigue or if that's just a factor of his pitch selection and he, you know, just goes through a tough time or what, and it could be both, could be one or the other. But yeah, I mean, it's something observationally we've seen that where it's like, oh man, it seems like Perez isn't doing anything. And then maybe he does pop for, you know, four homers in a week and a half, and it kind of evens things out later. So I see what you're saying there, even though maybe they don't average out over first half, second half, like you might expect, but, you know, maybe it craters on a month.
And I think what part of what brought that on is I was looking at 2014, and that bears out quite a bit more, that type of philosophy, because he starts at 317 on base in April, 295 in May, 383 in June, but then 255 in July, 239 in August, 240 in September, October. So, you know, those last 3 months of the year there, those are when the fatigue is really starting to get to him, or, you know, you would imagine, I should say, when the fatigue starts to get really, really hot, and it's just so many innings, so much wear and tear on such a big body. So, you know, there's maybe a little anecdotal, maybe a little bit of truth to it as well. But point being, I do think there's going to be some progression, because we forget how young he is because he's been around for so long, but he's only 25. So, I mean, there's still upside there in terms of his, I mean, I think he's reached the peak of his defensive capabilities, but, you know, that being he's a top five catcher defensively in all baseball. But, I definitely think there's still some upside, and I think it's going to come with his pitch selection, better pitch selections, better swings, better at bats. And I think he's going to have a better season. I mean, hard to have much better season than what he had last year, 20 plus home runs, World Series MVP. But statistically speaking,
right,
from the his slash line will look better than it did last year, I think.
I've got to go with the under on this. And a lot of it has to do with those kind of things that we just brought up. The fatigue, the way the season goes on. You know, I just think that if they're not going to change how they use him and how often they play him, you know, this year they're still going to be in a go for it mode, or at least we assume so. That means that he's not going to get days off that maybe he has opportunity to. They may be looking at, hey, every game's winnable this year. So that might mean more of those games in August where he's really dragging. And I think when you look at what he's done the last couple of years, you know, the on base percentage is pretty bad. I mean, I don't know if it's that the book is getting out on him and that pitchers know how to pitch him better, or if it's a little bit of everything, that, you know, he's wearing down, he's not swinging at good pitches. He still makes good contact, but that's kind of a blessing and a curse in a way, because if he's swinging at bad pitches, he's putting bad pitches in play that you don't necessarily want to put into play. And, you know, I think that might be something that hampers him down the line and through this season. But, you know, the one thing that I would say, that if he does kind of hit that over and performs, you know, at a little bit above average, and even the last 2 years he's been at like 251 on his true average, so it's not that far off from being just average as a performer offensively, everything all considered. The walks are always going to drag him down. There's no way around that. He's not going to walk much at all. But the power numbers have gone up. He had 3 home runs in 2011. Granted, that was 158 plate appearances, but the next year, in half a season, he had 11 home runs. In 2013, he had 13. 2014, he hit 17. Last year, he hit 21. His doubles have been jumping up too. So the power's going up, the on-base is dropping, so he's kind of trading a little bit. If it ends up that his power gets so good that he gets pitched around and he kind of takes it to heart and doesn't chase those, then I think that's the formula that I think gets him to be above average offensively again for the first time in a couple of years. And there was the first article we put up on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City was by Hunter Samuels about some adjustments that Salvador Perez has made over the last season. And in some ways, I think those adjustments have helped him with that power output. You know, he's a little more open on his stance. You know, his swing's a little bit different. But at the same time, he's still kind of chasing pitches. And some of those pitches, you know, in the bottom part of the zone are a struggle for him. But, you know, I mean, I think it could work out that if he does get those little things about pitch selection ironed out, that's where he's going to get back above average. I'm just not sold that it's going to happen, and I think he'll fall into bad habits later in the year, even if it does work out in the first half. So I don't think he's going to, like, collapse or anything. I think he's going to be about similar to last year, so it's going to be just a shade below average, but I'm not really counting on him to jump back up into kind of where he was in 2013, where, you know, he had some good power, hit for good average, and the average kind of carried his on-base percentage through the rest of the season. So I'm going to say under on that one.
Yeah, and I think to me what's always been kind of fascinating about Salvador Perez, and you see a lot of this with Elcides Escobar as well, and you mentioned it, talking about how he's so good at making contact, and how sometimes he, you know, put stuff that shouldn't be in play, puts it in play, and that hurts him in the batting average on base category. But I mean, a guy who walks in 2015 2.4% of the time, you know, you would think, okay, with a 280 on base percentage, 2.4% walk rate, his strikeout rate would have to be 35%, you know, like just striking out all the time, but it's only 14.8%. I mean, there are a lot of really good offensive players who have a strikeout rate, you know, right around there. I'm not sure what the league average is off the top of my head, but it's, I mean, you look at, just take Mike Trout, right? By most accounts, the best player in baseball, right? Had a 402 on base percentage last year. Struck out 23.2% of the time. So, I mean, when you, that's just kind of a, you know, just a fascinating aspect of, and there's, I think there's kind of a correlation between, and I've heard, you know, some discussion of the, just the way they approach the game, like that, because both he and Alcides Escobar from Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
and how they approach the game down there when with their kids as they grow up, and just the. And you kind of see it, especially with Salvador Perez, the way he's just got such a love for the game and all that. And I think that kind of just, like in Signs, right? When the Joaquin Phoenix character is struck out all the time, and he said it felt bad not to swing. So, you know, you wonder if it's something like that. But it's always a kind of fascinating aspect that even though he hardly ever walks, he's the ability to make contact is so so prevalent that his strikeout rate is so low. And then when you condense things down into let's call it a five game series against let's just pick a team, New York Mets.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, you know, completely hypothetical.
let's just say
when you've got, you know, pitchers who throw hard and throw a lot of strikes, and you're good at making contact, and, you know, in a condensed period, you can get a lot of things to fall your way, and you can end up hitting 364 in a five-game series and take home an MVP trophy. You know, so it's kind of the good and the bad, if you will. But we'll move on to our next one. Our next one is Lorenzo Cain. Now, this is kind of a favorite of the show. Last year, that he was a big kind of question mark last year, because in 2014, he had an over 300 batting average. For the first time in his career, he was healthy for a whole season. He was able to put things together. He looked good at the plate and had a good batting average. But everyone was like, okay, is this a fluke, or is this, you know, is this who he is? Because it's well documented, he started playing baseball late in life. So there was the kind of prevailing thought was, well, if there's anybody who might break out at an older age, Lorenzo Cain is a good candidate because he came to the game so late. So him having his first, you know, really solid year offensively in 2014 as a 28-year-old didn't seem as outlandish as if you would have to wait to, I mean, because, you know, Mike Moustakas having his first good season. I mean, he's 26, you know, a few years kind of earlier, but Lorenzo Cain started playing baseball a few years later. So that was kind of, but he proved everything that happened in 2014. He proved it was not a fluke and then some in 2015. So coming into this year, BP projects a mean batting average for Lorenzo Cain of 269. And I'll start off with this one, and I'm going to go with a hard over on this one. And I think part of it goes to the I have to look into it more on how exactly all these projections are calculated. But the, typically they'll kind of weight past years and a player's history, factor in some regression, ballpark, all that kind of stuff. And I think when you look back at Lorenzo Cain in 2013, he had a 251 batting average, which is not very good. And so when you look back at the last 3 years, which are typically the most prominent for any sort of an average or anything, that third year, and I'm not sure how much this is what I'd have to look into. I'm not sure how much weight something like that would be receiving in a calculation, but I do think a batting average that much lower is kind of dragging down the projection a little bit. Not to mention, I do believe they kind of try and factor in age, like a regression curve. And so him being closer to 30 than an Eric Hosmer or Mike Moustakas also doesn't help. That being said, again, the last two seasons, he's been healthy the whole season. He's shown, I think he's proved he's got a good approach to the plate. He's got good contact ability, and his power has continued to increase. Last year, I don't think anyone expected the type of power that he showed last year. So I'm going to go with a hard over on the 269 batting average for Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah, I think the 269 is pretty easy to go over on. The last 2 years hit 301, hit 307. And of course, batting average doesn't tell you everything. But, that was kind of the thing was, how can he hit 300 again? Well, I think the main thing that people expected last year was that there was going to be regression from his batting average on balls in play. And it did drop a little bit, but it was still pretty high. I mean, it's something that you pretty much every year he's over 300 on his BABIP. So I think that's something you can expect. It's, if you've got a guy who hits really good line drives, consistently hits the ball hard, or has some speed, while most players will kind of navigate back to that 300 for the league average, it doesn't mean that everybody has to. Some people have skill sets that work better to get around that. Lorenzo Cain has enough speed to where he can pick up infield hits. And last year, his power really helped him out because, he had 16 home runs. The first time he had double-digit homers, previously he was at 7 in 2012. He had 7 home runs. That was his career high going into last season. So, that's only a 9 home run jump, but those are 9 hits. It still counts for his average. And I think if he continues with the power and continues with more infield hits, I think he can continue with a high BABIP. I think he can definitely beat 269. I wouldn't say that he can do, 300 again, but I think something like the BP projection at about 80%, his 80th percentile projection has him at a 289 batting average. I think that's completely reasonable for what he can do, how he's improved over the last two seasons relative to earlier in his career. It's possible that his age may drag some of that down just because, as you get older, if some of the reactions do slow and he's going to be turning 30 years old. But, I'm not too worried about that. I think it's something that, I think probably as he ages, he'll add a little more power and lose some of the speed, but not necessarily that he's going to be like a 20 home run guy, but I think he can be pretty consistently in that 12 home run area and still get enough contact to get on base, still have enough speed left to get infield hits. I think he's going to be fairly consistent in keeping a high BABIP for the rest of his career, at least, maybe for the next 5 years, 5-6 years, provided he stays healthy. Obviously, that's always a huge question mark with him too. But I think for batting average purposes, I think over 269 is pretty easy. I would say I would feel really comfortable with over, 275, 282 for his next two levels in the projection. So I think he's fine. I think it's going to work out for him. I think he's going to have another good year.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you're looking at a guy who, for his career, he's got a 345 BABIP. So to kind of echo your point, like there are some players who have just been able to have a very high batting average on balls in play. Go look at Joe Mauer's statistics or Ichiro Suzuki or, you know, players like that. You know, I'm not trying to make a comparison offensively of Kane to those two players, but, you know, they are examples of people of players who have been, had the ability to maintain a not only higher but much higher than league average BABIP and not have it regress, at least not while they were in their primes. So I definitely think that's something that can maintain. And at some point, you know, you have to look and say, like, kind of like what you were saying, that's just what he is. He's just a guy that can have a high BABIP. So with that, we'll go to the next one. We'll go with someone who's new to the Royals. For the longtime listeners, we will long time. But if you've listened to some of the past shows recently, we've talked about Ian Kennedy. Kind of the, if you don't really count Alex Gordon, since he was, you know, a Royal last year, Kennedy's the marquee new guy being brought into the fold with you know, $70 million contract and big money deal for a pitcher. The question with him is his ability to have success and stay healthy. And right now, he hasn't really had health issues before, but he's getting older, and you always wonder these things. So Kennedy, Baseball Perspectives right now, is projecting for him 174 innings. So Mike, I'll let you start this one off. Over under on 174 innings for Ian Kennedy.
All right, so for this, the 174 innings, they have this projected over 29 starts, so that's 6 innings per start. So for me, the question comes, one, can he do better than 6 innings per start, or two, will he start more games? And I think he's going to start more games. I think he's going to have a full workload, so I think that's going to be enough right there just to put him over this 174. But another thing that I've thought about, and I thought about this shortly after he signed with the Royals, was that he's going to be on a team that was among the best defensively last season. He's a fly ball pitcher in a fly ball ballpark, and the Royals' defense was heavily skewed towards most of its performance coming from the outfielders. So it's tailor-made for him to get some outs with the Royals that he didn't get last year with the Padres. And I think that is going to have this trickle down effect where it might even be just one play a game that the Royals can make that the Padres would not have. And that alone is, you know, if he makes 30 starts, that's 10 innings right there. And that might be something that saves him on total pitches per inning. It may be something that gets him out of a jam. It may be something that, you know, allows him to go further and deeper into games so that, you know, he doesn't get chased earlier because, hey, you know, it's instead of Will Myers trying to make a play in center field, it's Lorenzo Cain. And, you know, Will Myers is a first baseman now. And so that tells you about the comparison defensively between those two guys. And so, you know, maybe Cain makes the play and Myers doesn't, and the guy ends up either back in the dugout against the Royals or standing on third base against the Padres. And I think that can be a pretty big difference in allowing him to beat that projection. You know, if he's not healthy, obviously he's not going to do that. He's not going to average 7 or 8 innings a game. I think 6 is probably right about it. But I think you're looking at a guy who can probably do 32 starts. I mean, I think he can do it. The Royals seem to feel comfortable that he can handle that. And, you know, I think that's going to work out for him. I would say I'm not necessarily bullish on him, but I was convinced somewhere in the whole free agency process that I was at least comfortable with him. And I think he could do something like 185 or so, or maybe even close to 190 innings. You know, if things really fall right, you know, 200 innings, maybe a season kind of like Edinson Volquez last year, where it just kind of works out and he's pretty strong all season long.
Yeah, I mean, he's had 200 innings 3 times in his career, and the fourth time he had 194 innings. So, you know, last year only 168. So that kind of contributes a lot, I'm sure, to the number that they've projected. I think I'm going to go over as well, similar to your reasoning. You talk about Edinson Volquez, and you know, I'm on the until proven wrong or proven otherwise, I should say, I'm on the Dave Island pitching wizard bandwagon. I mean, you look, go back to, Jeremy Guthrie, when he, regardless of how it ended for Jeremy Guthrie as a Royal, when he first came over, he was a, he put in some good innings and gave a lot of good quality starts to the organization. Then you look at James Shields, obviously, you didn't really have to do much with him, but Edinson Volquez, Jason Vargas, guys that have probably kind of outperformed their metrics and maybe even you would say their talent level a little bit. And then that extends even further to the bullpen. So I'll give the credit to Dave Island on that one and say, at this point they've kind of earned it. So if they saw something that they liked with Ian Kennedy, something that they think they can work with, then I think they'll make it work. And like you said, not only do you have, you get the kind of trickle down effect of with the better defense, but that there's so many things that contributes to, whether it's, not allowing as many base runners, not allowing as many runs, but then, fewer pitches. So if Mike Moustakas dives into the crowd on a foul ball, and makes an out, well, then that's, fewer pitches that he has to throw to that batter. If Lorenzo Cain gets a, makes a diving catch, not only is that a play that Will Myers wouldn't have made, or whoever's in center field now for the Padres, and saves the base runner, saves a possible run, but then that's less pitches he has to throw to get fewer outs. So like you said, that trickle down thing, there's so many things that go into it. I think it was a very good point, and that's why I'm with you on that for the over.
Yeah. And real quick, his injury history is, it's a lot of kind of little things. Like, he had an abdominal strain in 2014. Last year, he had a hamstring thing. But he hasn't really had any kind of arm issues since 2008, 2009. So it's not like he's having, he's missed some starts in some of these years, yes. But it's not like tendonitis, or it's not elbow inflammation, it's not shoulder issues, it's nothing like that. It's kind of other little things, and in some cases, we had hip, he's got bruises and cuts from one of them. It looked like back in 2013. I'm just looking at the injury history on his Baseball Prospectus page. He got a cut on his index finger from doing the dishes. You can't project that against him, and I don't think that BP's projections are doing anything against them, but I do think that they're a little cautious, I guess, in what kind of a workload he can do. And I think he'll be fine. I think he can handle it as long as nothing weird pops up as a freakish injury or as a kind of chronic injury. So I'm not too worried about him, making all of his starts. It's just going to be how effective is he and how does that add up. And I think it'll be fine. I think he'll do just fine this year.
I'm with you. I agree on that. So for our first segment, we'll finish up with this next one. And here's kind of the big one. I feel like this is kind of the echo of last year almost. But as the Royals showed last year, their season doesn't hinge on how well he does, but how good they can really be. The ceiling rises with Yordan Ventura, I think, where if he takes that step forward and becomes a top tier ace caliber number one starting pitcher, then you go from the 95 wins that they had last year to now you're talking 100 wins, that type of a, jumping up a little bit more. So the projection for Yordan Ventura is 168 innings. He's never been in his short major league career, never been a huge innings guy. I'm pulling up his numbers here to get his actual innings counts. For 2014, he had 183, and then last year he had 163, but there were, he left a few games early because of weird, thumb cramps and calf cramps, and then he got...
And brain cramps.
Yes,
from brain cramps,
suspensions, and
yeah.
He got sent down for 12 hours to the minor leagues because he was being ineffective. So, you know, there were a lot of contributing factors to him only pitching 163 innings last year after pitching 183 the year before. But he made all his starts in the playoffs, at least all the ones that he was scheduled to make. And the question is he going to – I mean, 168 innings, even considering what we know in his number last year, that still seems a little low to me, which might give away which way I'm going with this. But where do you come out on this one?
You know, for me, it's – I think 168 is pretty low. I think this is one of those things where the way it kind of comes together – in the projection is kind of what colors it. And last year, yeah, he was, you know, about, you know, 20 innings fewer than the year before, and he missed some starts and, you know, didn't really get a lot of games finished up and didn't go deep into a lot of games. And there were a lot of different circumstances that led to that. And so I think that's kind of counting against him in this case. I think he'll go over. I think he'll go over 168. I think he can probably cover, you know, 30 starts. They have him projected for 28, you know, and I think he'll be pitching well enough that he's going to go deeper. I don't, and again, he's not going to have the cramp problem. You know, they're projecting him basically to get about 5 innings more on the same number of starts next season. And, you know, I don't think you can really say that, yeah, he's going to run into these weird cramp things that make him leave a game early. He's not going to hit batters or throw at batters. He's not going to hit Brett Lowry. Well, maybe he will, but you can't project that he's going to hit Brett Lowry or yell at Adam Eaton. I guess he finished that game, though. That was the last out, I believe, in that White Sox game.
Yeah, I mean, you can... Actually, it might be reasonable to predict such things, but
maybe. But he's also put on a good amount of weight. He's worked really hard in the off season. You look at him; he looks a lot different. And even when he debuted, I mean, he was rail thin. He was a scrawny kid. Now he's added a lot of a bulk to his frame, and, you know, in theory, that should make him more durable, or at least that's kind of the prevailing wisdom sometimes, is that hey, he's going to hold up a little bit better. And I think that'll be the case. I also think he'll be able to pitch a little bit differently and not really run into the same problems that he had last year, where he admitted he felt a little bit of pressure to justify the contract extension, justify that opening day spot as the premier starter. I think he's going to have a good year. I think you're a little higher on him than I am. But at least for this purpose, are you also over on the 168?
Yes, I am. And I think for me, a lot of it lies in – there's a different feeling around Yordano Ventura just from what the way you hear people talk about him, on the people that are at spring training on the radio, the stuff you read about him from people that see him. And there's also – you know, I heard, I think it was Joel Goldberg on the radio talking about how Yordano Ventura says he really wants to make an effort to really refine his English and do interviews himself without a translator now, and how he, you know, wants to, it feels like there's kind of a little bit more step of maturity. And then there's also, there was an interview with Danny Duffy that I heard, and he stated how, you know, kind of like, what are you looking for to do, you know, this season, blah, blah, blah. That's, you know, standard questions. And his response was more or less like, I'm tired of everyone telling me how good I can be, and I just need to show that I can actually be it and be, you know, be that pitcher that everyone says, which is great to hear. And I have my reservations about Danny Duffy, but the reason I bring that up is because I think I definitely think there's a possible correlation there between what Duffy and Ventura, the team overall. I think that's there's kind of a feeling for the players that maybe have kind of underperformed a little bit. And I think you saw it last year with like a Mike Moustakas, and to a lesser extent, you know, Eric Hosmer, just people that they want to perform. They want to bring that level up, and they want to, you know, they're willing to change some things. Whereas, you know, in the 2011-2012 timeframe, it didn't seem like some of those younger players were as willing to change. Now it feels like with the culture that's been established, with the winning that's been established, it's, you know, this team's going to win. This train's moving. You're either a part of it or you're not. We don't have to sit around and say we're developing you anymore because we're a winning baseball team. So you can either make some changes and be the best player you can be to be, to make sure you're a part of this thing, or we're going to find somebody else. And, you know, not that it's put quite as bluntly from the Royals to these players, but I do think there's that kind of feeling there that, you know, we're a World Series champion team. I need to up my game to make sure I'm always at a World Series champion level. So, you know, I think that was a long roundabout way of saying that I think Yordano Ventura is going to, he's going to be better than he was last year. He's going to eliminate some of those stupid mistakes. He's going to eliminate it because, you know, a lot of the, sometimes you have a freak cramp or whatever, you know, but the early season thing where it was a repeated issue, you know, that, that may be a sign of him not taking as proper care of his body as he should have been. And if he's changed these things, if he's changed kind of his lifestyle in terms of how he prepares for the game and how he takes care of himself and that kind of stuff, then you're going to see those dividends on the field. And the early reports from spring training are that we've definitely seen them so far.
You did have the flu this week though, so that sucks. But
really, I hadn't even heard that.
Yeah, I mean, they just kind of skipped a start, but it's, you know, it's spring training.
Yeah, whatever.
It's not anything anybody's going to be worried about. I think the maturity is going to be a big thing for him, and I think that, I mean, I certainly think he's going to be able to cover, you know, at least, you know, every start this time. I don't think he's going to get a suspension. I mean, who knows? Maybe that'll just continue to be a thing. But I, you know, I don't anticipate it. And as long as everything stays healthy, and if his workouts are better now, then maybe that should be the case. Then, yeah, I think he's going to be fine. And definitely clear the over on the innings. I'm not entirely I'm not sure what to expect. I mean, there were times last year where he looked really, really good. And there were some times last year where he looked really good and then kind of fell off. So I'm not sure as far as, like, performance. I think he'll be better than average. But I don't know if he's there yet. But I think that's something we can probably talk about in a little bit, after a break, if that's what we're going to do.
Yes, we'll take this to break. Stick with us through the break. Then we come back on the other side and we'll be talking more Royal.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Bo Jackson says hello.
The Vault.
Kansas City is excited for a world championship defense in 2016. After setting team attendance records last year, the Royals have become the hottest ticket in town. There's nothing like watching a game at Kauffman Stadium, but if you're looking for an alternative or you can't find a ticket, you should try Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's Westport Inn has TVs all over, spacious lower floor, and more upstairs on Randall's rooftop. You'll always find a friendly bar staff that are ready to talk Royals baseball with you, and they have drink specials every day. It's a great place to watch a road game, and if you were there for any of the playoff games last season, you know how fun and wild it can be to cheer on the boys in blue surrounded by other Royals fans. And how about this? You don't have to pay $12 for parking. Kelly's is located in the heart of Westport, where they've served the best drinks since 1947. Let their tradition become part of your tradition.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thank you very much for sticking with us through that break. We, in the first half of the show, we talked a little bit about, or talked a lot about, the over-under for different statistical things for different players on the team. And those numbers were projections from Baseball Prospectus about what those players would do. And then we were just riffing on those, whether we thought they would, you know, overshoot or undershoot them. Now, Mike and I, this is the second annual Bold Prediction and Pizza Party segment. So first segment was the pancakes. Now it's the pizza. Mike and I have some bold predictions we're going to share with you. We did this last year as well.
Carb loading. We did it the year before too, but we didn't put as much fanfare behind it because last or 2 years ago, you went with Kyle Zimmer was going to get 50 or like 20 innings in the majors.
Oh yeah.
And then last year you transferred that to Sean Manaea. And that was wrong. on both. I don't remember what mine were, so they were probably clearly wrong. Didn't,
I think I had a Lorenzo Cain bold prediction last year. Did I have a homer thing?
I had that one.
What?
I had that one.
That was you? Okay. I remember one of us had that.
I had that. I had Moose because I was just like, eh, fine. And I ended up right about that one. I was way off on Christian Colon at second base. Way off. I thought he was going to be the starter.
You might have just been a year late. Who knows?
No, I don't think I'm a year late. I still don't think I'm. I just don't.
Yeah.
To have Chris Sale.
But anyway, Mike, we'll start with you. Give me number one. What's your bold prediction?
This one, and I feel bad because, you know, if you're just listening to us from Baseball Prospectus, I'm going to assume that you're very big into the analytical side of the game. That, you know, you really do want to find a good reason for something. I have no good reason for this. I have no real big, you know, glowing beacon that leads me to this prediction. But I think that Dylan G is going to be an absolute steal. I think he's going to be a significant performer for the Royals. Maybe even like their third best starting pitcher. I'm not sure how many innings he's going to cover. That's one problem in this thing. But a lot of this is gut. I'm just rolling with my gut here. You know, what I kind of look at is, you know, he's had some success in the past. And when you kind of look at, you know, the Royals, they've got a good defense. You know, their infield is pretty strong. The outfield is good, too. Dylan G, he's a little bit more of a ground ball guy. So that does kind of cut into some of the upside of, you know, giving up a fly ball that your outfielders can go get. The same thing that makes Ian Kennedy a pretty attractive option kind of doesn't work for Dylan G. But, you know, I think he's a guy who generally his numbers have been pretty good, or at least average as far as like strikeout rates and things like that. Last year it was down, but last year was a pretty weird year. Last year he got, you know, outrighted to the minors because the Mets had this army of youth that can all throw in the mid 90s and just higher.
Disgusting amount of pitching.
Just so much young pitching. And you know, Dylan G and Bartolo Colon and John Neese, those all three guys just got shuttled around into the bullpen, into spot starts. G ended up in the minors. Never really had any opportunity to get any kind of footing. And, you know, ended up with the Royals. And I think the Royals, it's a great place for him to end up. Big stadium. Good defense behind him. And I just, it's just a hunch. It's entirely a hunch. I think that his batting average on balls in play is going to end up going down. It was 355 in 40 innings last year. You know, I think that's going to level down to around 300 where it's typically been in his career. I think you're going to see his strikeout rate go up. I think the home run per fly ball percentage is going to go down. And I think when he puts guys on, I think they're going to end up stranded more often, so they're not going to score. And I think that's going to add up to him. You know, I think he could probably cover 15 or more starts and probably give him, you know, a good amount of innings. I'm thinking bullpen maybe the first month, and then from there, you know, maybe spot starts and some bullpen work. And then, you know, by midseason, you're looking at a guy who's going to be taking the ball every fifth day. And I think that's going to add up to, you know, maybe 130 innings. And I think he's going to be a little better than average. And maybe that's not super bold, but, you know, Dylan G's not, you know, anybody that I think a lot of guys figure is going to be a huge contributor. And I think he's got an opportunity to kind of jump in there and be a guy who can cover a pretty good chunk of innings.
Yeah, you know, that's, I mean, that kind of goes back to what I was mentioning earlier when we talk about Dave Island and his wizardry. You know, if he can make it work on someone like Dylan G, then that's amazing. And that's one of those things where then you think about if he does give you what you said, give the Royals what you said, then I mean the immense value they'd be getting from that pickup is insane.
Yeah. Minor league signing to a pretty strong third, fourth starter. That's okay. That's pretty good.
And my first bold prediction is somewhat similar, but for a different guy, I'm going to go with Chris Medlin as a big one. We saw him at the end of last year and in the playoffs. And after coming back from his second Tommy John surgery, there were times where he looked really good. There were times where he looked flat and his command wasn't quite there. And that's something to be expected when recovering from a Tommy John surgery. You have kind of the ins and outs. You kind of go in and out of being able to command the ball like you used to. And so that second year back is when you really get that strong command to come back, assuming you had it in the first place to begin with, which Medlin did. So I'm going to go with Chris Medlin. I think Chris Medlin is going to throw 125 or more innings for the Royals, most of them as a starter. And I think he's going to do all of that with an ERA under 3.5. Again, part of this is the Dave Island train. Part of it is Medlin's pedigree and his ability. He was never really a big burner with his fastball. He wasn't an overpowering guy to begin with. He was a location command type of a pitcher, always been that way. That's why, you know, it seemed like, you know, the pitchers that really get a huge deal made about him are the big guys that just throw these, like all the Mets pitchers, the guys that just throw these astronomical right. amounts. Yeah, so his average fastball speed, the most he's ever had in a season was in 2011. He had a 91.1 average on his fastball. So he's never been a guy that overpowers you with just incredible stuff, but he mixes pitches well. He's got three really good pitches, and he can locate them. He has very good command. And so that's something that, you know, velocity is the biggest concern when coming back from Tommy John. So if you don't rely on velocity in the first place, now I guess, you know, the flip side is if you're hitting 91,
you don't want to be at 85. You don't want to be Jared Weaver.
I was just going to say, you don't want to be Jared Weaver. So, but last year he averaged 91 miles per hour. So the velocity doesn't appear to have taken a huge hit. And if that command comes back fully, I think he's a guy that can really put in some good quality innings for the Royals. And I think he's someone that can really make a big difference for this team. And you think Dylan G, but I think Chris Medlin could easily come up and be the number three starter in terms of performance on this team.
He certainly has a better track record leading up to this. It's just all those injuries and problems that that kind of kicked him out. But yeah, I could feel it. I mean, that's the reason so many people really liked the Chris Medlin signing when the Royals did it was, you know, yeah, he'll probably contribute in 2015. And he did. I think he ended up with more innings than most anybody really expected by the end of it. You know, he threw about 60 innings for the Royals in the regular season and then added some later on. And that seems like, well, that's pretty solid contribution for a guy. So if they bump that up this year, you know, yeah, he could do that. That's kind of falls in line with the BP projection at his 90th percentile where, you know, 3.25 ERA, you know, if he can do that, yeah, you know, he'll keep the ball in the ballpark. He won't walk a lot of guys. That's a good recipe in my opinion. So, I think you probably have a better shot of getting that one to pay off than I do with my Dylan G, but it's just, you know, it's just something. It's just that feeling that something's going to come out of Dylan G. But the other one, this is kind of a gut, but this is also kind of like, you know, for my second bold prediction, it's also, you know, being able to see a lot of these guys pitch for a long time. And the second bold prediction is going to be that in 2016, Kelvin Herrera will have a better season than Wade Davis.
Ooh.
Which doesn't seem possible.
That is very bold.
Because Wade Davis was pretty much untouchable the last two seasons.
Can we take a second and remember, just to, in case anyone forgot, there is an award that exists called the Best Reliever in Baseball Award, and Wade Davis did not win it.
Right.
Just let that sink in. I just want to remind people that that's a thing.
That's like saying best shooter award, and it doesn't go to Steph Curry.
Yeah, right? Like
pretty much. It's like, how does that
do that?
How did what? I don't know. Don't know. Whatever. he got a better award later in the year anyway.
Yes,
so they can do what they want with that award. But
you think Kelvin Herrera is going to be even better?
Yeah, and that's not to say that I think Wade Davis is going to fall off a cliff either. I think Davis is going to be pretty good. But there is a certain point where he's been so good You know, 72 innings in 2014, 1.0 ERA. Even better in 2015 at a 0.94 ERA. Didn't walk a lot of guys, big strikeouts. But I think at a certain point, some of that does have to regress back. You know, it does have to, he has to become human again at some point, right? I think maybe not. I mean, maybe it is a full on conversion.
Only have to become human if you're human in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he fell into that Superman 3 robot converter thing and really is a cyborg. But I think he's going to come back a little bit. And I saw something earlier today that Jeff Zimmerman, who's been with Fangraphs and Hardball Times and Royals Review and everywhere, basically, mentioned that his velocity is down this spring, which maybe that's a worry for Wade Davis. Maybe it's not. You know, it is spring training. He, you know, to an extent, he's just trying to get his work in and maybe doesn't really have to do anything. Plus, he's pitching the fifth inning of games in Surprise, Arizona. It's not like amped up for holding a lead in the eighth in September, you know, or closing it out in the ninth. It's completely different set of circumstances. So I'm not terribly worried about that. But this, it's more about Herrera and what I think is possible from him. You know, he has been such a strong reliever the last couple of years. You know, he did have that really rough year in 2013 where he gave up a lot of home runs and a lot of people wanted to cut him, or even worse, cut his arm off. But a lot of that was really just first half problems. And in 2014, he was a solid contributor out of the bullpen. And the main thing that I kind of looked at was he added a slider towards the end of the season. He didn't really do a lot with it. I don't remember even seeing much of it and hearing much about it until about September. You know, just messing around with it. And then when he finally really unleashed it, it was pretty lethal. And the example that I can think of is the game in the ALCS, game one. He comes in against Toronto. He's trying to protect the lead. Just burns him down. Just, you know, first batter, fastball, all strikes, all swinging. Just sits Deonor Navarro down. Then on his next batter, he goes fastball, slider, fastball, gets a little pop-up from Kevin Pillar, and then finishes the inning off going fastball for another strikeout swinging. Well, the next day, the next game, game two, he's back in to protect the lead. This was the game after the Royals had made their big comeback off David Price with the dropped pop-up and all the hits and things like that. So he comes in against Edwin Encarnacion, middle of the order, you know, just cleanup guys, big-time hitters, goes fastball, then goes with the slider, and then just buckles in with the slider. And you know, later on he gets, Russell Martin, fastball, slider, same combo. And it showed me that, one, he's extraordinarily confident in that pitch. Two, that what that pitch allows him to do against right-handed batters is filthy. Because he's got this 100-mile-per-hour fastball with good life, and he's got his better pitch is even his changeup, which he will throw to righties not that often, but you have to think that it's there. You have to have it in mind, and now you're adding a third thing. And so just by game theory and guessing and everything, you've got three strong pitches you have to be aware of at all times. And if he's throwing you, you know, that slider and you're expecting fastball, you're either not going to be able to get a swing on it, you're not going to get a good swing on it, or you're just going to be so far ahead of it that you're not going to do anything with it. And I think that is a huge thing that he's added this year. You know, that's the kind of thing that you add that pitch. That's what can add to, you know, a guy's big boom. And I think that's going to be huge for him. I think it's going to make him that much stronger of a pitcher. And, you know, I think it's going to get him closer to Davis. And I think ultimately even better. Maybe it's not by a much, you know, not by a big amount, but, you know, I mean, if we're talking just strictly on ERA, which, you know, not the most scientific way to go about it, but yeah, you could see, you know, Herrera with a sub two ERA and Davis with maybe a little higher than that, or maybe even around two, still makes them both really, really good, but it makes Herrera better. And I think, you know, the third pitch with two excellent offerings, one inning at a time. I mean, what are you going to do? They can't hit him with the two pitches already. He has a third really good one. I think that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, you might be onto something there. That's, I mean, to say anything about Wade Davis possibly slowing down makes one little hesitant. But then, you know, if you didn't make it a bold prediction, it wouldn't be bold. So that's
I think Wade Davis will play baseball this year.
Exactly. There's plenty of
nailed it.
Plenty of sportscasters around who will give you bold predictions that are really just, you know, nominal things that you would expect to happen.
Right.
So it was definitely impressive to see at the end of the season, because I think a lot of times, and you talk about relievers and how they're so volatile. I think a lot of that comes from the fact that, you know, you don't have people doing a lot of times what Herrera did, which is trying to develop new pitches and try and further your game. You know, I think when you get into reliever, you say, I've got my one role, I'm successful, I've got these two pitches, let's go. Excuse me. Let's go, and I can make this work. And then after 2 or 3 years, then all of a sudden, everyone knows what pitches are coming. And unless you're Mariano Rivera, they can adjust to it and they can hit it. And if you don't find new ways to like reinvent yourself and to keep the hitters guessing, then you're kind of screwed. And I think that leads into a lot of the volatility that they have. And it's really kind of really awesome to see Kelvin Herrera continue. He's had success for a few years now, and to see him continue to refine his game like that, and then to see him really kind of take off at the end of the season and then in the playoffs. And what you mentioned, I mean, the way he played against the Blue Jays and everything, I mean, he was just phenomenal in the playoffs. And I mean, he and Wade Davis, you know, both of them had to pick up a little slack after Holland, you know. I mean, for most of the season when Holland was struggling, and then when they finally put him on the disabled list, both of them kind of had to pick up the slack, and they did more than enough. So you might just be onto something here. So we'll see on that one. Then we'll end with my final bold prediction. And I kind of, you might be able to guess how this bold prediction based on some of the comments I made in our first segment, but I believe Yordan Ventura will get Cy Young votes this year. I mentioned in the first segment, I think he's matured. I think there is a culture in the organization now that is going to push him to be better than he was last year. I think last year, the second half of the season, he was actually pretty good. And there were just some, and we talked about this before on the show, that just some really strange things that happen, even beyond the cramps and the suspensions and the fights and all that kind of stuff. Just, you know, I go back to, was it game two against the Blue Jays that he pitched?
Yeah, it was game two. It was the one where they started with the shadows.
Yes.
And then, you know, the shadows went away and the Royals couldn't hit David Price until the seventh. But
yeah
and, that was the game.
And I believe he had, it was like 5 1/3 innings pitched, and like the first 5 innings were, he gave up like 2 hits and no runs or anything, and then that final 1/3 he gave up a few base runners that ended up scoring, and I think he ended up having about 3 runs on his stat line, and so it didn't look quite as impressive. But I mean, he was really impressive those first few innings, going toe-to-toe with a guy like David Price, and then he just kind of, you know, something happened and he kind of fell apart a little bit, and they had to, you know, bullpen had to come in and bail him out, and the Blue Jays had to bail him out defensively.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's, I think you see things like that happening, and I think those types of things, those are the things that come with maturity, you know, being able to handle, okay, I just gave up a hit, maybe two, how do I regroup? Where do I come back from this? And I think that's something that also kind of goes into it, that I think he's going to be better at doing that this year. He's going to know that, you know, and this goes back to kind of what you mentioned earlier, talking about this kind of trickle down effect from having such a good defense. You know, I don't know that Yordan Ventura had that feeling yet of, this is going to be, you know, that I'm okay in front of this defense. I can, you know, they're going to pick me up. I don't have to worry about it as much. You know, I think it's easier for a veteran like an Edinson Volquez to come in and be like, oh man, this is great, you know. And I think Volquez might have been a little bit used to it as well, because the Pirates have a pretty good defense on their own the season before. But you know, I think the more your Donald Ventura matures, the more he's around, you know, just this team, this organization, he gets the feeling. I think he's going to be more comfortable in getting that feeling and not feel like you mentioned with Ventura even admitting that the pressure kind of got to him a little bit. Now, I don't think he's going to start opening day this year, and you know, I think they're going to try and relieve some of that pressure, and it's going to be, I think all of this stuff is going to contribute to him just really focusing, getting back down to it, and being the, on a consistent basis, being the guy that we saw in Game 6 of the 2014 World Series. I'm sorry, Game 6, where he pitched a phenomenal game, shut down the Giants, and looked like a future ace. And even though he had the early struggles, I think this year he's gonna turn it on. He's gonna get Cy Young votes. I think he's gonna be that guy that we all want him to be.
Yeah, I think some of those examples, you know, maybe that means that he's just that much off. Maybe he's just that close to really turning it on. And he had a couple of those games where he ended up he would start and it just didn't work. You know, he would have one bad inning and it would kind of blow it up a little bit, or he would get into trouble and maybe give up a little more than he needed to. But when he finally kind of started buying into his breaking ball in the second half, that's where you saw a lot of the improvement down the stretch that really kind of worked for him. I'm glad you mentioned Volquez, because I remember last year, and maybe this is revisionist because it's easy to do it this way, but when they got Johnny Cueto, a lot of people thought, well, hey, maybe Cueto's going to show him how to be an ace. And when you see, you know, later you would see all three of them together, especially in post-game stuff, you could kind of tell that Cueto's not that guy. He's not that guy to really like, hey, Ventura, here's how you do it. I think Volquez is that guy. I think Volquez is, you know, the more outgoing of those two, or of between Volquez and Cueto. And having him back this year, I think, is going to be a significant kind of thing. That, yeah, I mean, if he's going to make the leap, I bet you that Volquez gets some credit from Ventura for that kind of thing. You know, because I think that might be the kind of deal that works out. Because Volquez is another guy who a lot of talent kind of figured out, kind of turned it around. Some of that is, you know, he has had some good pitching coaches, but he's still got to go do it too. And maybe his break came out later, you know, a couple years ago when he was with Pittsburgh. But, you know, I think that can kind of work in both of their favor, where Volquez can kind of be the guy that Ventura can emulate and, you know, maybe get over that hump, so that that one third of an inning that he gets chased from, he finishes it out. I mean, that's what the hope was for Ventura coming into the year. That's why they gave him the extension. He was going to be a guy who was going to garner some of those votes. And, you know, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I'm not sure if I'd go that far. I think he's maybe another year off from that, but you know, when a guy gets good, they don't always just work up to it. They kind of just burst into the scene, and Ventura's got the profile for that kind of season. I'm not going that far out, but you know, I think I like it. I like it. I want to see it happen.
Yes, that would be phenomenal. All these bold predictions would be fantastic.
Right, and they're all pitching. So yes. I mean, what is that? What does that say about what we're most concerned about on the team, maybe?
Yeah, and it's like we talked about on the show before. It seems like these past 3 years we've had basically the same concerns, and you know, every year the Royals find a way to either fill the concern or work around them. So especially the last 2 years, it's been, you know, starting pitching, right field, second base. And unfortunately, it's still starting pitching, right field, second base. And unfortunately, there's I think it maybe even say more in a negative way about right field and second base, that there's not even a bold prediction to make. I mean, is your bold prediction that I think Christian Colon's going to hit 250 at second base?
Right.
You know, that's not really a...
I think as bold as you could probably go for that, just off the top of my head, would be like Raymond Fuentes, like, takes it.
Yeah,
he's had a really good spring. He's got a really good kind of prospect profile to him, but you know, it's still not somebody that you feel like the Royals want to do. So I if you were going to go bold, that's what I would kind of say, that he would play more than Orlando and Dyson, but I don't know that they'd do that.
If I was going to go super bold, and this is just me, I would probably say that Raul Mondesi would be the starting second baseman by the end of the year. That's really bold. I'm not saying that. This is not a bold prediction by me. If you had to go bold, I think that's about as bold as you can get in second base. So
it's not outside the realm. I mean, they had him not in the World
they,
Series.
They love the kid. They absolutely love the kid. So, and rightfully so from everything I've heard. But as Jim Callis said when we had him on the show a few weeks back, I hope the Royals kind of slow it down with him a little bit so he can kind of catch up to the game, because the concern is he's a hacker, similar to Salvador Perez, Alcides Escobar, and you don't want him to fall into the same trap that possibly Salvador Perez has fallen into, where he just never develops that walk tool, that patience tool, because he has so much success making contact, getting hits, coming up through, and then just goes right into the majors, and then eventually you get to where he is now. So hopefully that doesn't, you know, he doesn't fall into any sort of a trap like that. He can kind of catch his breath a little bit and get to the point where 2017 will be looking at a real big surge from Raul Mondesi. But that is a different topic for a different day. So with that, I think we will leave you on our first show that we have completed now for Baseball Prospectus, BP Kansas City. So just to kind of rehash everything for both old and new listeners, I am Jeff Herr, host. You can follow me on Twitter at TheJeffReport on Twitter. With me, of course, the other voice, the sultry tones that you're hearing that are not me are Michael Engel. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael Engel. Engel spelled E-N-G-E-L.
Yep. People mess it up so often.
Yes, I'm sure that people do. And then the site, obviously, if you found our podcast through other means, the site is bpkansascity.com. Go there, and lots of great content, lots of great writers, and lots of great Royal stuff. And we will be with you all season long. This will be kind of this is Tuesday night when we're recording it, and our goal, obviously things come up in life. I just had, for those that, if this is your first show, I just had my first child 5 weeks ago, so she's still very, very young, and lots of things can very suddenly with small children, so life can always get in the way. But the goal here is, starting now, moving forward for the foreseeable future, the rest of the season, all that, we'll record every Tuesday night and then post the podcast Wednesday, hopefully on the BP Kansas City site. We have our own podcast page within the site. So be sure to check every Wednesday, kind of just put a little reminder, notification, whatever, for you to check. Make sure you can download, upload, listen to the podcast every Wednesday. Moving forward from here on out, if there's a change in that schedule, you know, you follow us on Twitter, we'll be sure to let you know. And if there's anything that perhaps you want us to discuss, or any questions you have for us, or anything you want us to look into,
or if you think we're stupid, I mean,
yeah, or you just want
totally
to
totally fair,
you know, totally fair.
I have a thick skin, I can handle it.
Absolutely. We've had a lot of that involvement before from fans. We absolutely love it. So, you know, just if you follow us on Twitter, shoot us a little message, anything like that. And
you can also email us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. I don't know if we're going to have a BP address for the podcast. Maybe, maybe not. I haven't really asked yet.
Been hashed out yet.
Yeah.
But so anyway, yeah, KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com if you want to send us a little bit more of a longer form email, and then go ahead and you can just throw some comments at us on Twitter, or some insults, like Mike said.
And what are your bold predictions? That's maybe something we can throw there out there. If you have a bold prediction, let's hear it. I mean,
if there's some really good ones, we'll bring them up next week and we'll talk about them and see how bold we actually think that they are.
Nothing's too well. Some things are too crazy, but nothing's too crazy. Like, maybe the Royals will sign Drake LaRoche to a contract and just trot him out there against the White Sox every year.
That may be a little much.
Just troll them all the time. Brett Lowry.
It's Drake LaRoche Day at Royal Stadium.
Right.
White Sox.
Give him a bobblehead and everything.
Little, Oh, man, that would be... Oh, jeez.
We're going to have to check in with the BP Southside to see how they're handling that.
Definitely.
That is a mess.
We're going to have to get, as we get closer, I guess it'd be within the next week or two. Yeah. If we wanted, we could try and get somebody on from each of the other four sites and try and get them talk about... Do all four of them have sites right now?
Not yet. I think White Sox are the only one right now other than us from the Central. Yep, that's it for right now. So they're still working on rolling out local sites. So maybe
we can get them on at least and talk about how they're trying to stave off an organization-wide meltdown.
Yeah. What in the hell?
That's some weird stuff. But anyway, so that's our show for this evening or this morning or afternoon, whenever you're listening to the show. So to all the longtime fans, new listeners, everyone, thank you for listening. As I said, every Wednesday, start checking bpkansascity.com. The new podcast should be up sometime, hopefully in the morning. And can just plan on that from there, and we'll be with you all season. We'll be talking great Royals stuff. I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to have some of the writers on from the BP Kansas City site. We've had Craig Brown, David Leskey. We've had those guys on the show before. I'm sure we'll have them on again, some of the other writers as well. So definitely tune into the site. Lots of great Royals content. If you're a Royals fan, it's definitely where you need to be. Keep tuning into the podcast. Thanks everyone so much for listening. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault and for visiting Baseball Prospectus Kansas City. Find the podcast on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault or on Facebook at facebook.com/KansasCityBaseballVault. Baseball Prospectus Kansas City is on Twitter at @BProKansasCity. You can email your questions or comments to us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.